Welcome to the Penny and Pops podcast. He's Spencer Penny Strode. I'm Adam Pops Papa Giorgio. So the Magic, they lost game one in Cleveland, 97-83. We're going to go over kind of everything about that game one, what we'd like to see maybe fixed for game two. But I'm just here to just say don't freak out, Magic fans. It's literally one game. We could lose game two on Monday, and I would still be pretty calm about the situation. Like a series doesn't start until the home team loses. And yeah, did the Magic have opportunities to win that game, especially in the third quarter? Yes, they did. But you know, it just didn't pan out. Donovan Mitchell had a really good game, and he looked pretty healthy to me. So that's something to factor in. But the Magic, they missed a lot of shots, and they made a lot of mistakes. Some of it was kind of playoff game one jitters a little bit, but they, you know, they lived up to the moment. And again, they easily could have won this game if we hit some shots and make better offensive decisions. But it's just one game, and welcome to the playoff basketball, Magic fans. I know some of the younger folks, they're not, you know, they weren't around for the Dwight run, let alone the mid 90s run. But this is what happens when you have a young team with studs that you expect great things from eventually. You know, you get a little antsy, like, oh, why, you know, why'd we do this? Why not that? It's fine. So let's go.
Hardaway straight down the lane, the power jam. Point guard on the 7-6 guy. Here's Lewis turning and he shoots. Yes!
Here's Turkaloo for the win.
Goodness. We're recording this Sunday afternoon, April 21st. It's before today's slate of NBA playoff games that begin at 1 o'clock. Before we get into game one, briefly, you know, Jonathan Isaac, he was on Friday's Magic Pod Squad episode, and he said that he believed he was the best defender in the NBA. And yeah, time will tell. If he stays on the floor, he's got a good chance of proving that. But basically, if you listen to the Pod Squad episode, both J.I. and David Steele both strongly hinted that he was going to start on Saturday, and that ended up happening. Going into game one, Penny. All right, so it can't be overstated how many media members and former players actually want the Magic to win the season. Now, a lot of them didn't pick us to win the series. They still pick Cleveland, but a lot of us wanted the Magic to win this series just from a pure basketball karma perspective. Like, you know, the Cavs tanking to get us is a strategy that I think very, very rarely gets rewarded long-term. Now, it might pay off in the short term here in beating us if they do in this series, but this team's not going to the NBA Finals, I don't think. But, and then, you know, from a predictions perspective, like aside from bad viewpoints like John Hollinger, like most people have this series going 6 or 7 games. Again, I've seen more Cavs than Magic predictions, which is fine because this is a 4-5 matchup and we're the 5 seed. But and then looking and listening at interviews during the few days going in, you know, you had Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell. They were very nice and very complimentary of the Magic. And yeah, and then beyond that, from an injury perspective, like the Magic were fully healthy going into this game, and then and Cleveland was basically just missing Dean Wade. So, any thoughts? I guess going into all this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess traditionally the 4-5 matchup tends to be a more of a coin flip, obviously, than any of the other playoff matchups that you see, and certainly this year no different, when basically, you know, Cleveland only finished the regular season one game ahead of the Magic. Record wise, obviously they, you know, punted to finish that way and to get there. But going into Saturday afternoon, as you mentioned, Magic at full health, coming off a huge win to wrap the season, and Cleveland kind of limping there, there's no reason for the team not to feel confident. And based on all of those factors, for, you know, the national media to at least show a little bit more confidence in the Magic than maybe we might have thought before, you know, predictions were published.
So this game opened the entire NBA playoffs, which I believe we did it in 2019 as well. And kind of just like for that game one in Toronto where DJ Augustine hit that game winner, we were at Wall Street for game one against the Cavs on yesterday, Saturday afternoon. Downtown has changed in those 5 years, not in the best of ways, I would say. You know, a lot of good bars, clubs, and businesses have left for mostly cost and rent issues, really. But and Wall Street has really struggled a lot amongst all that. So, but it was 92 degrees here for those that were outside and at that watch party. They felt every bit of it, I'm sure. And up in Cleveland, it was in the 40s. Very windy day in Cleveland. So very stark weather contrast there. But the Cavs, they gave these nice kind of long white long sleeves to their fans with their playoff motto being hashtag let them know, which I slightly like their motto more than our hashtag everybody in motto. I think you disagree, Penny, right?
Let them know what is the big is the biggest question. I think every slogan is fine. We came to that determination that everybody in is fine. I think let them know is a notch below that. But I do want to say I'm appreciative of the fact that you did let us. We were at Wall Street for the watch party, and you did allow us to slide into Hooch, which is at least covered with fans and the semblance of air conditioning, even with the garage doors, you know, pulled open and not in the middle of the courtyard, because it was a brutal heat Saturday. And I would have played out the 2 second TV delay just based on the temperature difference between inside and outside.
So Hooch was the vet move. And I mean, even 5 years ago, we were technically in Hooch for that. It wasn't as hot, I don't recall, as it was on Saturday. But yeah, we were in the shade and we had a nice fan blowing. So we were good. But for the people that were out in the actual plaza portion, they were roasting. So vet move on our part. So the game, when the game started, like the first, most of the first quarter, they had it on the ESPN feed, and we didn't realize till basically the first Magic shot was made that there was a 2 to 5 second delay between us and what was going on outside, because they had the local Bally feed on directly into the two big screens that they had outside on each end of Wall Street. And we had the ESPN feed briefly. So half of the first quarter, I felt like, was trying to get the bartenders to change the channel to the local Bally Sports feed. Although we did have that moment, the first 2 minutes of the game, where all you could hear was the crowd noise and the court noises and all that. And it actually sounded pretty good. And then they got Beth Mowins and the whole all ESPN female crew for, you know, their audio working after that. But I mean, if Bally Sports is calling it, and it's Jeff and David Steele, like you got to go with the local guys for that. So once we did that and switched it over to the local Bally feed, there wasn't a delay anymore, right? I didn't notice a delay after that.
No, after that we were all synced up and good to go. And it's kind of weird because you either know something good's going to happen, or you know something bad's going to happen, or sometimes in the case of the gigantic missed Paolo dunk, you go, I have no idea what's about to happen, but there's something that's going to happen.
So Hooch, from a price perspective too, I mean, they had all of Wall Street Plaza, they got $4 Michelob Ultras, which was good. Even when we switched to like Yinglings, I think they were only like $5. So couldn't beat that, honestly, in this economy currently. So I will say, though, to the dudes that were ripping ass standing next to us, that was not very well appreciated. You guys need to get your colons checked out or something. I don't know, man, because that happened like three or four times, and I could not figure out who the culprit was. Not that I was probably going to say anything at that point, but I just, that was not ideal. So that was the one really negative experience, was that part. But, and then I don't smoke weed. You don't smoke weed. Like, I don't care to smell pot smoke, but it was 420. Like, I knew it was going to happen. So, but Mostly the ripping ass part was not was the least appreciated part of that. So, all right. Jordan Brand clearly still thinks very highly of Paolo because they let him debut the Air Jordan 39, which shoes look pretty good. And look, I know he had, we'll talk about it. Paolo had 9 turnovers in the game. I don't think he should have had 9. It was probably closer to 6 or 7, but he still had a really good game overall. And and then Jalen Suggs, who had a really awful offensive game, he debuted a new James Harden shoe colorway, and that's what happens when you wear James Harden shoes. You suck dick in the playoffs, I guess. But yeah, so Mosley, he kept the starting lineup close to his vest. Like, we didn't know what the starting lineup was going to be till about a half hour before tip. But as expected, J.I. did start at the five with Franz, Paolo, and then Gary Harris and Jalen Suggs. I mean, going into this, J.I. had to start, right? It couldn't be Wendell, right, Penny?
Yeah, I mean, and as we talked about before, the Magic treated game 82 like a game 7. So you envisioned that would be kind of how they would operate going into the playoffs with J.I. starting.
Yeah, too bad our offense didn't show up like they did in game 82 for this one. But so early on, it's a bad start out of the gate. Like, we talked about this when we were looking at the regular season meetings. You know, the Magic and Cavs regular season was 2-2. 3 of the 4 games, the Cavs got off to the better start, and Cleveland in general gets off to good starts because they have a good starting five. You know, they have, in this case, the core four of Donovan Mitchell, Darius Garland, Jared Allen, Evan Mobley, and then the fifth guy in this case was Max Strus did not kill us in this game, surprisingly. So I'm sure that's going to come eventually. But yeah, I mean, we were down 8-2 out of the gate and then 16-6. And just the Cavs, especially Donovan Mitchell, like, he hit like some challenging shots even by his standards. But, you know, Mitchell hit a couple threes early, and then we left Evan Mobley wide open for some threes, and we were down 19-8 like that. So the Cavs punched us first. And obviously, we never led in this game. If we did, it was very early on, but we definitely didn't lead as the game progressed. But and that's because Cleveland went 5 for 5 on threes. And we'll talk about the 3-point shooting and all that in a bit as when we look at the grand picture as a whole for this game one. But the Cavs opening that game 5 for 5 on threes, 3 of them at least being kind of open or fairly open, not ideal start. And we just had to ride the choppy waves. And I don't know, what'd you think come at that point early on, Penny? Kind of standard game one playoff stuff for especially a young team, or were you kind of concerned with what we were seeing?
Yeah, I mean, none of it was surprising. We called it basically in the preview pod. I anticipated that we'd find ourselves, you know, having to deal with that first significant punch out of the gate. And we certainly did. Obviously, you'd never want a team to start 5 for 5 from three. And a couple were, you know, heavily contested, but a couple were wide open. So, you know, that kind of is what it is for a Cleveland team that's opening the playoffs at home with all that energy behind them. And you hope the Magic will be able to do a similar thing for game 3, but not totally unexpected. And then the hope was that you steady yourself and start mounting that incremental comeback from there, and that they cool off from behind the arc, which, you know, they did quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, like, you mentioned the energy too, and Cavs fans brought it. Like, kudos to them. They, like, I know Cavs fans as a whole were kind of souring on this season, but they showed up hard to game one, and Cleveland fed off of it, and it got chippy early on. It was interesting that that the Cavs were looking to get that chippy with us early on, because they instigated more than we did, honestly. But we were only down 33-26 after the first quarter, which that's not bad at all considering how it all started. And, you know, Evan Mobley, Donovan Mitchell each had 10. Paolo was at 8 points. The game didn't really start to settle down for us until Mo Wagner came in, and he gave us just that great energy and his kind of vintage shithousery at this point, where he had some big plays on both ends. Like, he was getting on the floor. It's just hustle stuff that you really wanted to see. And Because even, I mean, for most of this Cavs game, but especially early on, like the Cavs were winning the 50-50 balls, and just we didn't stand a chance if we were going to let that happen and then have them hit a bunch of threes on us. We then had that weird Markelle Fultz flagrant foul call against him on George Niang, which I still don't understand how that's a flagrant. And then in the process, Niang got tagged with, I guess, a taunting tech. And after all that, it was 38-31, where you had a minute there where the Magic might have been able to get it, you know, within a single shot. But I don't know. What'd you think of, I guess, Mo swinging the energy, and then especially just how it got chippy, where it Niang really was starting a bunch of this shit, and then Garland's throwing elbows here and there. And I mean, we didn't cower. Like, the moment wasn't too big for us. Like, we stuck up for ourselves. But that Fultz flagrant foul was bullshit, though.
Well, first of all, I want to applaud you for correctly calling the 10-man Magic rotation, which I'm not sure is the best approach, but a good call from you that we would continue to, you know, rely on that bench depth that had done so much positive throughout the year in the regular season. And obviously, Mo, as you mentioned, really changed the complexity of the game, even without scoring or rebounding, you know, in the first little stint there. Not surprised, obviously, that the emotion and intensity got ratcheted up, and not surprised about the chippiness. One thing that I am concerned about, and I don't know if it's a founded concern or not, but, you know, Niang's an asshole, but he's also a portly individual. Yeah. He's throwing his weight around in a chippy way, too, that I have concern about some of the body contact with some of our more fragile ligamented guys as the series progresses.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be an issue. Hopefully it'd be great if he gets thrown out of one of these games sooner than later, but yeah, it's going to be a chippy series. That's for certain. Three times in that first half, Cole Anthony ended up guarding Evan Mobley in the post, which ended, it was a guaranteed 6 points each time for Cleveland. So that wasn't ideal. Cole was just not good in general, like both offensively and on the defensive end. Like, Cole was not good. Gary and Jalen Suggs weren't much better. Like, Markelle, he wasn't hitting shots either, but at least he was kind of dishing and getting rebounds. So, out of those four guards, Markelle was the best, which is not saying much. Yeah, obviously Gary and Jalen, they were still defending well, but just offensively, it was brutal, and we needed a lot more from the guard position offensively, and we just didn't get it. But and then, you know, we talked about Niang. Niang guarded Paolo a lot in this game, and I thought Paolo should have and needed to attack Niang more and harder. And I know Niang, he's got deceptively quick feet, but a couple times there, Paolo should be able to get by him, and it just didn't happen. So I don't know if Paolo was just a bit tentative, hesitant a little bit there. He was maybe worried about getting stripped by help defense. I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. Thoughts on that, I guess, the Niang versus Paolo stuff.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you want him to try and take advantage either in the post or face, you know, shooting over the top or facing up and using his size, length, and quickness to get around. And if not get to the rim, then at least, you know, force the Cavs defense to help and recover. Problem also is that, as you mentioned, Paolo got zero help from the starting front backcourt, essentially. Yeah. And also the bench was completely worthless as well, outside of a couple, you know,
outside of Mo, basically. Yeah,
bright spots. So a lot of it ended up being on Paolo's shoulders, and again, you know, his first playoff game, I thought he availed himself well overall, but part of that learning lesson, I think, is also knowing where and when to pick your spots, and in addition to that, I think the conservation of energy where everything's heightened too, that you know, maybe you can't necessarily attack every time, but at least pick your spots a little bit better.
I didn't fully look into it, but like we staggered Paolo's minutes, but we didn't. I felt like we didn't stagger Franz's minutes, even though they both guys played a lot more minutes than they usually play, which that should be standard going forward through this postseason. But the other thing was Paolo handled the ball a lot more than Franz, and I'm wondering because I know in the in the past games this season, Mobley would be the one guarding Franz when Franz was. Would dribble with the ball, and that led to some not great performances from Franz. And I'm wondering if they just wanted to lead on Paolo, and maybe they leaned on him too much, and maybe next game they give Franz more of the ball. But I did you notice that or not really?
I mean, a little bit, but my counterpoint, well, not even a counterpoint, but here's a question for you. So, but frankly, I don't really trust Jalen Suggs to operate the offense in a
No.
playoff environment.
He's not a point guard.
You saw him get a little bit ahead of him. He's at his best when he's this year shooting the catch and shoot three or straight line driving, knowing that he's going to finish at the rim and not trying to think on the fly. Got into some trouble a couple of times in game one, but assuming it's either Paolo or Franz creating offense right now, who would you rather have the ball in their hand in terms of the other guy of that pairing being, a spot up shooter essentially? Who do you trust more to catch and shoot a three right now, Paolo or Franz?
Catch and shoot. I still think it's Franz because Paolo likes to take a dribble or two before he pulls up. Like he's so used to doing pull-ups that when he's in and actually open for a three, he's not comfortable yet with that because he's so used to being double and triple teamed. I think it's Franz. I'm gonna assume you're gonna say the other way around though.
No, I think the same as you. So I think that kind of pigeonholes you to
Yeah.
having Paolo really being the primary creator. And then at least, Franz is either catching and shooting or gets to be the secondary creator off a little bit of action created by Paolo. But that also puts Paolo in the predicament of having the opportunity to create nine turnovers and lose nine possessions. So you kind of that's kind of where we are, I think, as a team, is you're picking the best you have out of the options available to you, but none of the options are necessarily perfect options right now.
Well, there is an option available, but Mosley's not using it, and maybe the moment's gonna be would be too big for him. But look, the Magic were down 12 at halftime. Despite being down 12, I thought we were still okay in this game. And here I am again. I would have started Anthony Black instead of Gary Harris to open up the third period, which I knew wasn't gonna happen and didn't happen. But Gary's last shot in that first half, he airballed a corner three. Like I can't have that from, two of one of my two vets on the team. I can't have that, Gary. And there's other games where he looked bad in the first half and then he recovered in the second half by knocking down some shots, but that did not happen in this game. And with it's playoff basketball, it's ratcheted up a little bit more, but it's one of those where I can't play Gary. I can't play Gary if he's not knocking down shots. I'd rather have Anthony Black out there and have his height out there than have Gary, even though Gary played pretty good defense, no doubt about that. Him and Suggs, they defended really well, and we'll talk about it in the third, but our defense is what kept us in the game and basically almost started the comeback on its own, but we couldn't really come back because our offense wasn't doing that great as a whole. But I get going this kind of point guardless starting five, and especially when you have guys that can handle the ball like Paolo and Franz, but at the same time, I need a guy that's willing to shoot threes, and at least Anthony Black is willing to shoot threes and brings kind of a little extra on top of what Gary does defensively. Like I think Black's a better defender than Gary Harris because Black's longer and taller, and he can match up against a guy like Donovan Mitchell, who even though Donovan Mitchell is 6'3", he's got that 6'9" wingspan, and it's like you're going up against a 6'6" guy. That's why even Suggs can't slow down Mitchell because Mitchell's got those long arms, and Gary doesn't stand a chance either. So I would like to see Anthony Black out there and give him a shot. And if the moment's too big for him, then that's fine. You gave it a shot, but you got to give it a shot. And we didn't give it a shot. This game, that 12-point deficit at halftime, it was literally down to basically free throws missed by the Magic and threes, because the Magic were 2 of 16 on threes and the Cavs were 5 of 16. So the Cavs went from starting 5 of 5 to the rest of the half, they missed 11 threes in a row. So, which would continue in the third, but I don't know. What's your Anthony Black viewpoint, Penny, or are you just rolling with what we got here with this five, or is there like maybe a breaking point after game two, where if Gary again has a shitty game two, that maybe then for game three, you switch it up, or do you switch it up in a different way?
Yeah. I mean, I to me, the only way that Anthony Black gets any run would be as if game two is a blowout in the fourth quarter. I don't think there's any intention of playing him, at least until we get home. And then even then, I don't see it happening unless you're down 3-0 and you're throwing everything against the wall to see what sticks. And, you know, like the end of game three going into game four, I don't see it for this year, but that's not to say that that's not the right move. You know, it's hard with Gary Harris because it's the same thing. I think, you know, you wanted to bench Gary at halftime of the Bucks game where he airballed a three and was shooting poorly. His defense was better, obviously, in that game than in the, you know, game one of Cleveland.
Well, and he had a good third
second half and ends up hitting too.
Yeah.
So
he had a good third quarter against the Bucks. Yeah.
Right. How far, you know, there's a track record there that you're hoping comes back around. And if you pull him too soon, then you miss out on that. If you pull him too late, then you still get nothing out of him. So it's a delicate decision for sure.
Yeah. Going in the third quarter, nobody was in definitive foul trouble. Like Gary, Jalen, Wendell, Mo all had two fouls, but yeah, I mean, Mobley had 16 points, Mitchell 14, Paolo only had three in the second quarter. So he was at 11 points. But in the third, I mean, the Magic, the refs finally let the Magic get a little handsy defensively. And, you know, Suggs got this awesome 6-0 run sequence where he had that and one dunk, and then he hit a three, and the Magic all of a sudden were only down 55-47. And then we held Cleveland to 2 points the first 6 minutes of the second half, which that was awesome. I mean, like Jonathan Isaac's fueling a lot of that. Being there, but I mean, also both Gary and Jalen, they were doing a good job getting in there. Basically, the whole five. I mean, Franz and Paolo, everybody did a good job defensively of just getting in passing lanes, getting their hands in, and everything. Where felt like Cleveland got away with that in the first half, and then we didn't. But and then in the third, the refs kind of let us play a little bit, but that wouldn't sustain in the fourth, unfortunately. But we also then got some threes finally from like Isaac and Paolo, and we were only down 60-53. I think the closest we got this was four, I believe. But
yeah, we cut it to four, but also we were stuck on, if memory serves, 55-50, but we were stuck on a 5-point differential for so long. And
yeah,
you know, that first 6 minutes, 6-7 minutes of the third quarter was a perfect microcosm, I think, of the 23-24 Magic team, just stifling defense. And also not quite enough offense. So you exert all of that energy to get back into, you know, I mean, always you were within striking distance, but really good two possession game down to 4 or 5 points and just possession after possession, stopping them, but not being able to capitalize on the other end. And to me, when, you know, we did get it to four, as you said, but that 5 point that we were stuck on that 5-point difference so long, and it felt like, if we didn't break through there and get it to two or tie it up, that things were going to start swinging the other way. And then, you know, obviously they kind of did.
Yeah. I mean, we couldn't offensively take advantage of just being that close to tying that game up. And then Niang got like this easy bank shot to put Cleveland up 10 with 2:32 left in the third. And then I think at that point was when Niang pointed, I'm going to assume he pointed at Jamal Mosley to call timeout. So, I mean, we've seen people get teed up for that. I mean, Joe Ingles literally got teed up for that earlier this season, but I guess because Niang was on a technical, they didn't want to eject him on that, which fine, but keep consistent with it, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, the Cavs, this is still during the stretch where the Cavs missed 18 straight threes. So they went 5 of 5 from three to open the game, and then they missed 8 straight threes. But then we really just got hurt by Caris LeVert, because we had Caris LeVert had two and ones going at the rim, and we were down 15. And you know, it just wasn't a great stretch. Like we couldn't hit shots, and we were down 58-73 entering the fourth. It was a 13-2 Cavs run to end the period, and you could have said it was over. I didn't want to. I still thought it was possible to come back, but it's tough when you've got 58 points through three quarters, right, Penny?
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head at the time, first to 89 wins, and even that seemed an uphill climb, but I think that ended up really being prescient in terms of the number, because offense was such a struggle, and frankly, it ended up being a struggle for both teams.
Yeah.
but you know, obviously the Magic more so, just nothing, not even free throws going down, which has been a bugaboo for a long part of the season, too.
Yeah, I mean, Garland, he opened the fourth with a three-pointer, and then just in a blink of an eye, we're down 20. And then it really felt over. And then it wasn't, because then the Magic went on this 13-2 run with Franz hitting a three, and then Joe getting a steal and feeding Mo Wagner. And we were only down 71-80 with 7 minutes left. And then Mitchell hit an open three to make it 88-74. At that point, you know, like you said, I said first to 89 points win. So if the Magic needed to have basically a 31-point fourth quarter, and you know, and it wouldn't have, it ended up not, it would have not ended up being enough, assuming, you know, Mitchell was going to still hit those shots. Like Mitchell hit that open three, like I said, to put him up 14 with 4:44 to go. And at that point, it was just, it's time, it was time to think about game two. The game was there for the taking. We didn't grab it, and now you just got to kind of learn from it. I guess the scary part is Darius Garland didn't even play that well. It was mostly Mitchell, Mobley, and then Jared Allen was just such a good just paint presence. I was a little unhappy with Mosley's reluctance to use his challenge down double digits, and when he didn't use it, he lost the challenge anyway, right? Or did I get that wrong? I can't remember now, but
yeah, he ended up using it on the deflection. I think it was Gary Harris deflecting the ball off Mitchell on a drive that was not conclusive to overturn, which I knew it was not going to get overturned when he finally decided to use the challenge there.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Magic, they didn't have nearly enough guys cutting to the hole. There's too much dribbling into Cavs players, because we knew Cleveland was going to pack the paint, and it's going to happen more and more until we hit more open shots, which we're capable of, but we just didn't do it in this game. And Donovan Mitchell, I think, got the official dagger when he made it 90-78 with 3:15 left. And Mitchell did look a little gimpy, though, after that. So we'll see if there's anything injury report-wise going into game two. I will say the good news of losing this game, and we lost this game, 97-83? Yeah, so the good news about losing this game is you can't get douchebag swept now. You can get swept, but we just can't get douchebag swept now. So there's plenty of fixable things offensively that you can do. It did help that Franz did hit some threes in this game, so maybe we can that gets Franz going in game two. I mean, both Franz and Paolo offensively did fine overall. We just needed more help, you know, other than Mo Wagner, like they got no help. You know, Paolo after the game said it well. I think he said, you know, we shot 32% from the field, 21% from three, and 60% from the line, and it still wasn't ever over until the last 2 minutes. And then Franz also pointed out how they needed to start games better. And I think if you start game two better, then we're talking about just a completely different situation. But and you know what, even if we don't start game two well, then we could still obviously win that game, just because our defense can be so stifling, and you just need to find kind of an offensive flurry and just kind of sustain a little bit of offensive consistency. And we just didn't do it in this game. Nekias Duncan shared on Twitter like a really good 2 minute clip that showed just how the Magic scored 0 points off of Paolo Banchero led pick and roll possessions. Like some of those, there's a few Paolo passes. Then there's also, though, a few good defensive Cleveland moments. But I just see misses and misreads from Gary, Suggs, and even Franz. And I don't think that's going to happen again in the series to that degree. And like I said, a lot of this is fixable. They just got to be better at it. But I don't know. Any comments on any of that, Penny?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the whole of that. The counterpoint is obviously the Magic got blitzed to open the game in the first quarter with the hot Cleveland shooting. Now, the problem is that we can't chalk this up to Cleveland shot the lights out because
No.
they ended up not.
8 of
as
30
you
on
mentioned,
three.
Right. Garland didn't have a great performance. The complimentary guys did not shoot it well from the outside, despite some pretty clean looks that we, you know, we dodged quite a few bullets in the second and third quarter as we were hanging around there. So, but all that being said, to me, there's nothing that Cleveland's doing that is, you know, overpowering or can't be countered or something that the Magic just don't have an answer for on the roster. So, at the end of the day, I think it obviously it's going to come down to who makes shots. And there's, I think we, even though the Magic are not the best shooting team, that there's confidence in this group having enough there to score points and enough points to win games and win the series. So, disappointing game one in the sense that it was there for the taking, but, nothing there that, you know, knocks the confidence level down from anyone, you know, fan-wise or, you know, a part of the organization, I think. And the other thing, too, is we, you know, you talk about, like, even in a loss, is there anything that we found that either we can exploit or is there anything that we showed that Cleveland can exploit? I don't think anything necessarily. The best thing was Franz hitting those back-to-back contested threes in the fourth. And maybe if there's anything that carries over, maybe it's that confidence that, you know, he can take and make those shots that open up another dimension for the Magic offensively.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if maybe we try to run a little bit more offensively. Because, I mean, we looking at the box score, we won fast break points 18 to 12. Second chance points 13 to 6. Points in the paint, the Cavs killed us, and that can't happen if they're hitting threes and killing us in the paint. Like, we can't win that way. Like, the Cavs beat us points in the paint 48-36. I mean, the Magic, there's self-inflicted wounds a little bit there. I mean, look, we shot 19 of 30 at the free throw line. Cavs were 17 of 20 at the line, or 17 of 21 at the line. So, yeah, the Magic missed 11 free throws. The Cavs missed four. We were 8 of 37 on threes. Cleveland was 8 of 30 on threes. You know, they'll shoot it a little bit better, but just don't eat like a 5-for-5 onslaught of threes and let those threes kind of come in more balanced manner, and then you're a little bit better. You know, we went a 10-man rotation. They technically went 9, although Sam Merrill played the 4 minutes in the first half, missed two threes, and Bickerstaff sat his ass the whole second half. So they really went 8-man rotation. I mean, they got 14 points from their bench, which doesn't sound great, but then the Magic only got 8 points from their bench. Like, Mo Wagner, who only played 13 minutes. I mean, Mo was 4 of 8 from the field. He got 10 points, 5 boards. Do you think Mo should have played more, right? And he'll probably play more in game two somehow, right?
I mean, at least I think Mo should be on the floor with Joe at all times to, you know, to really take advantage of that pick and roll connection where the second unit came in, everyone but Mo. They tried to roll Wendell out there. And then when Mo finally came in and got things going, it obviously jump started. So wouldn't be surprised to see Mo's minutes increase. Wouldn't be surprised to see Wendell's go down a bit, maybe even Markel's go down a bit. And then obviously you got to make a decision on Cole. How long do you let him ride before you go another direction there too?
Yeah, looking at turnovers, Paolo had 9 of our 12. So as a whole, 12 turnovers isn't bad. I don't think Paolo should have been given 9. I think it should have been no more than 7. And then, yeah, we forced 17 Cavs turnovers. Like, Mitchell had 4 of them. Garland had 5. Garland actually shot the ball well. He was 6 of 11, 14 points, but it was just kind of a quiet and an assist, but it just felt quiet from him. So maybe we can keep it like that, maybe. But Mitchell led everybody with 30 points, 11 of 21 shooting. Allen got 16 points, 18 rebounds. That was just big. Like, the Cavs did a good job of drawing Isaac out with just good passing, and Allen just got some easy buckets down below, and just our help defense wasn't good enough. I'm sure they're going to keep trying to find ways to do that. Mobley also had a double-double, 16 points, 11 boards. No, I mean, nobody had a bad game for them. I mean, even Max Strus, he had 7 points and 9 fucking rebounds. So we got out rebounded 54-40. Like, that can't keep happening either, is the rebounding thing. Now, a lot of that was just based off of just 3-point shooting and all that. But I mean, it was, again, 50-50 balls. We weren't getting to them as much as they were. And then looking at our bench, and I already said Mo had 10. Fultz was 0-4 from the field. He had no points. But I thought he was still the better of our guards offensively. Cole, 0-7, 4 points from the free throw line. Wendell, 1-3, 3 points. He was 1-2 from three. Like, there's a couple threes he passed up that he should have took. Joe, 0-2 from the field. Just not a great showing from Joe. He can be a lot better than that. He only had 1 point. Like, he even missed a free throw. Like, we can't have that from Joe. You know, Paolo, 24 points, 7 boards, 5 assists. You know, he's got the 9 turnovers, but Paolo played well. Franz, he kind of got it going a little bit there in the second half, 18 points, 7 boards, 3 assists, 3 block shots for Franz. So that was great from him. Isaac, 3 of 8 from the floor, 10 points. Gary Harris was scoreless. Gary Harris, 0-6 from the field, 0-5 on three. Just can't have that. And in Suggs, even though he had 13 points, he was 4 of 16 from the field. He was 1 of 7 from three. Like, can't have that. So, yeah, I mean, let's talk about what we want to see from game two, Penny. Do you give Mo Wagner more minutes? J.I. still starts, I assume. I saw a couple of people tweeting that maybe you can help out the bench by having J.I. come off the bench. I'm not doing that because Wendell's going to get eaten alive by Jared Allen and or Evan Mobley. Like, you can't do that. I mean, Paolo played Mobley pretty well, so that's fine. Just keep the starting, you know, keep the starting front court the same. You know, do you shorten the rotation? Is Anthony Black going to start instead of Gary Harris? Probably not, but that would be something I would look into. Yeah. What do you think, Penny?
Yeah. I mean, I think the number one move is probably to shorten the rotation. And I think I would squeeze Markelle Fultz out. And I know we talked about, he was the best performing of the guards, essentially, more or less. But, to me, I think the minutes there don't really provide anything additional value beyond that. The thing about game one is it was right there for the taking, but also I don't know necessarily that the Magic deserved to win game one. Talk about the 50-50 balls and everything like that. So what I'm looking for in game two is a little bit more of the same. I want to see Paolo scoring, you know, 24 plus again. I want to see Franz up around 20 points. And then you want to see everyone else contribute in a way that they're more than capable of contributing. So beyond that, in looking for those internal improvements, I think the other thing, as we just talked about too, is probably trying to match Joe and Mo's minutes, minute for minute, to at least have that pairing where there's that connection and that outlet for, you know, pick and roll creation. And then let Cleveland adjust from there and see what happens. But definitely need a lot more from the bench. And maybe the way to do that is to shorten the rotation a bit and also, you know, try and match minutes a little bit better. The other thing too, I think, is there's no reason to have any minutes at all where either Paolo or Franz is not on the floor.
Right.
A couple stretches where I don't know that necessarily hurt the Magic, but it just doesn't make sense to even have that be a possibility.
No, you're right. And, you know, hopefully that's where Franz gets staggered a little bit better. Cause I mean, let me look at the minutes again real quick. Cause Paolo ended up playing 41 minutes. Franz played 37 and a half. So there's almost 4 minutes there basically where you could have Franz definitely staggering out there. Cause I mean, look, there's no back-to-backs. Like, these guys can play 40 minutes. Like, they're young enough. They can handle it. Jonathan Isaac almost played 30 minutes and probably would have played 30 minutes if maybe it was a little bit more competitive down the stretch in the fourth quarter there a bit, because he played almost 29 minutes. But you're getting 33 minutes out of Gary, 33 minutes of nothing out of Gary offensively. Suggs, 33 minutes almost himself. I don't expect a lot of rotation changes, and you might not have to, because, you know, the guys now have all know what a playoff game is like. They went through it. They kind of know how they got to start game two. And if you just naturally start game two off better, And there's no reason to have those opening playoff series jitters anymore. Like, you did it. You got the game out of the way. Now you can focus on winning game two. And look, if we're basing series predictions off of amount of rest days, game two is going to be a magic win because we only get one day off. So, you know, we had all these days off leading into game one. We only get one day off here Sunday before going into Monday. And we're probably not going to be at Wall Street for game two. Mix it up. Maybe do something like Mills 50 area. Don't know, but definitely going to mix it up, change it up a bit, and kind of get some good vibes going. But I will say, too, the other one thing I didn't mention earlier that I didn't appreciate at the Wall Street party was them doing the play the song thing, which they should have saved for after the game had we won. You don't play it before the game, but I get it. They're trying to get everybody hyped up, but I think that brought some bad vibes into that. But I want to get Anthony Black minutes somehow. And whether that's him taking Fultz's minutes, that's fine. Like, but you got to get Anthony Black in because he's an asset that's sitting on your bench. And there's Magic fans talking about Jet Howard. Jet Howard is not ready. He's going to get abused if you throw Jet Howard out there. Anthony Black, he's been through some stuff. And if your concern is that because it's very chippy, like Black might get a little too emotional, do something stupid, like throw an elbow or whatever. Okay, you can give me that argument, but you got to throw him out there and find out because this kid's going to get more playing time next season, assuming, unless for some reason you're using him as a trade chip going into the summer. But like Anthony Black can hit threes. He proved it the whole second half of the season too, or as the season progressed, like he will knock down threes and he's not shy to take them. You know, Fultz, he had like two chances to shoot a three. He didn't do it. Instead, he kind of bumbled the possession away, really, if we're being honest. And if Markelle Fultz is not most likely not in your future, now's the time to give Anthony Black these minutes because he's going to have playoff jitters too a little bit. The other thing we could talk about maybe is I don't think this is the series for Goga Bitadze. I don't think Goga is good. It would be great against either Allen or Mobley because they're just so mobile and they'll draw him away from the perimeter and he can't recover like a guy like Jonathan Isaac can. But you got to see more from everybody. Like, yeah, I'm with you. It's between, Paolo, Franz, and Mo. Those three played well. You got to get more from everybody else in game two. And if you do, we got a good shot of winning game two. But anything else you want to add to that, Penny?
I mean, I think we definitely do. And important for fans to remember that obviously we haven't been through the playoff ringer in the last 4 years and haven't really been in a series where we've had a legitimate shot to win it in a while, certainly much longer than that. So everything turns on a trifle in the playoffs, as you know, and we're sitting here on a Sunday afternoon down 1-0, but could just as well be, up 2-1 after the next two games are played. So there's nothing there that gives any reason for concern that it's not doable. It's the internal improvements that you would expect. And, there's nothing that Cleveland's doing that we can't counter, which I think is the most important thing.
Yeah, I will also say the Magic do not have to win game two. It'd be awesome coming back to Orlando to 1-1, but the Magic do not have to win this game two. I'm seeing people saying, game two is a must win. It's not. It's really not. Okay. It's really not. It could be 0-2 coming back here. We win both games 2-2, and then we have all the momentum going into game five, potentially back up in Cleveland. Like, it can just change on a dime like that. So, but as we've been talking about, the opportunity is there to take game two. And I'm just going to leave it at that. Any final thoughts before we get out of here, Penny?
I think that's about right. And I certainly agree with you. I don't think game two is a must win game. So let's, again, enjoy this one as fans, this next one, and then get ready to receive the team as they come home for a significant home court advantage in game three.
Yep. All right. That's going to do it for this episode. If you're still listening, we thank you very much for your time. We are the longest running Magic podcast show in existence, so any added support is much appreciated. Subscribing, rating the show highly, positive comments, they all help this podcast ranking immensely. Tweet us any of your questions and feedback. Penny, what's your Twitter handle?
At Spencer Strode.
No C's, just S's. And I'm at Papa Giorgio MBO. And with that, take care. Let's go Magic.